The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Tomorrow, Tuesday, March 12th, is the runoff for the special election for House District 125. This seat in the Texas House of Representatives opened up when Justin Rodriguez was appointed to the Bexar County Commissioner's Court. The runoff is down to Republican Fred Rangel and Democrat Ray Lopez. We invited both candidates to come on the air live and take listener calls. Rangel declined due to a conflict with the campaign event. So instead, we have a recorded interview with him, and later we do have Lopez with us live to take your questions. I started off by asking Rangel to introduce himself.
My name is Fred Rangel, and I am a candidate for House District 125. Where is House District 125? It's pretty much inside 1604, all the way south to Zarzamora. You take Babcock, just all the way to on the east end, and then, of course, down to Highway 90. Up, looks like Callahan, Culebra Road, up to Prue and Gilbo, all the way to 1604. Very large area, about 101,000 voters, typically there, registered voters, and looking forward to the conversation. My background, I have been in the district for well over 50 years. There's no question. From the voter perspective, Izzy from our area. I'm homegrown. Went to Edgewood Independent School District back in the time when the school district was the second poorest district in the country. Excelled. Went to University of Pennsylvania. Came back, studied architecture. Came back, started my family, and was in the second part of the district, which is Northside ISD. So I've seen the many areas, the growths, the issues. I've worked, lived in and around House District 125 pretty much for about 50 years.
Can you talk about your experience in government and running for office?
Sure. I have served many community organizations for the past 25 years. I've had city council appointments to the South Texas Business Fund, the Capital Improvements Advisory Committee. These are all city council appointments. And when I served these, I also served on the 2012 Bond Election Committee. I have served neighborhood organizations such as my own neighborhood, 14 years worth there. I was a board member and, of course, became president, served 9 years out of 14 in my own neighborhood association. So I have served also here recently with the Republican Club of Bexar County. I'm a president, and I also have served on the basically the state Republican Executive Committee for Senate District 26. My recent appointment by Governor Abbott was for the Texas Real Estate Committee, and that's that has been, of course, the appointment since about 2016. I believe that both those state appointments make me very qualified. I will say that the specifics, for instance, in the SREC on a state level, we receive, and that was on the Resolutions Committee, we receive resolutions from across the state of Texas. Those resolutions are then vetted. Check for platform, check for constitutionality and different things. And of course, then we made a list of recommendations that went to the Texas House Legislature, of which I am now running for. So we have been vetting several resolutions over time, and I feel that we have actually created very, very good resolutions to take forward to the Texas Legislature.
So tell me, you know, you are running under the Republican banner. What does that mean? What do people take the Republican Party to mean, particularly for the district?
Well, obviously those that serve under the banner of conservatism, I am a conservative, basically you know, the platform of the Republican Party stands for life, pro-life, and also several conservative positions. I think that we can talk about. Particularly, I believe, for instance, I've been endorsed by the NRA. Believe in the Second Amendment of the Constitution. I stand for it. You know, I have been also endorsed, received by several of the organizations that support that. When it comes to the listener, they're obviously, you know, interested in several key issues, some that are not state related. So I'll just remain to the state related issues, such as, for instance, school finance reform. There are certain ways I believe school finance reform needs to be directed to be able to solve several of the disequity issues that we have in the schools programs. Secondly, also the position on property tax relief. In the way you go about solving these issues is what makes it, you know, representative of a particular thought process or culture. Many of the issues that I represent are even nonpartisan, because is school finance reform partisan? I don't think so. It is for the sake of the students, the children, the teachers, and certainly property tax relief is another that is not partisan, because it is about relief for everyone regardless of party.
So then what do you want to see happen with the school finance bill that is now working its way through the legislature? If you get elected, you could be there in time to vote on the final stamp on the bill.
That's correct. The school districts, for instance, have inequity problems. For instance, when you have a failed school situation, what do you do? How do you handle the school finance inequities? For instance, in one district, in my particular district, you have issues where the schools don't have all the facilities and all the tools to be able to function. I'll give you an example. And this is way far back, and many of these have been solved now, but some aren't. When I went to high school taking a physics course, I was given a brand new physics book and was told there would be no lab equipment. And my question was, well, how do you do the testing so I can learn? And they said, we don't have the lab equipment. You'll have to speak to the superintendent.
This is at Edgewood?
At Edgewood.
Around what year, you think?
Well, it was back in the 70s. I started 69 to about 73. And during this time period, my brother that went to also Edgewood in Edgewood High School were actually having classes without air conditioning. I remember being in Edgewood Junior being without air conditioning. And you know what? One of the choices that I made was not to go to one school because the other school had air conditioning. I wondered why we have a disequity in that situation. Later, my wife and I lived in, still do, in Northside Independent School District. Well, we have seen where we have actually supported bond projects where other schools would be built and so forth to the tune of 12 and 15 million. But I keep looking to the inequities to Edgewood District.
So how do you fix that?
Certainly, I think that the judicial system has already proven that there's inequity. That's been clear for years. What has not happened is action, no action to be able to solve many of these problems. And so I intend to research, to go in and dig deep and see what the needs are, hear out the school district board members as well as the students and teachers, and say, okay, what are we missing? What have we missing, and what can we do about it?
Some say charter schools or voucher programs could be a way to help students who and families have given up on the traditional public school system. Where are you on vouchers?
Well, certainly, David, the issue comes to mind for me. If I had that situation and I had a choice to go to a better place, I would. Therefore, I do favor a voucher program. But let me specifically say it this way, that I favor a pilot program that would allow vouchers for failed schools. The second one would be that those schools who are not able to provide all the facilities and infrastructure that the students deserve, This is an issue, I think, that just needs attention. You know, from another perspective, and you asked the question, how do you handle, you know, school finance reform? Just on the previous question, to tie it into this one, is that obviously as a businessman, I see things from a business perspective. You know, when you have teachers that have taught and done their job and haven't seen raises on a regular level, obviously, you know, that is one of the other issues. But school vouchers for me is about creating a solution to a problem. If you have failed schools, if you have schools that don't have all the necessary tools to be able to accomplish their job, I certainly support it.
Now, you mentioned that you are pro-life.
Yes.
And so there are bills that are working their way through the legislative session right now, a fetal heartbeat bill, other
yes.
Bills that would greatly restrict a woman's access to terminating a pregnancy. Where are you on those?
Okay. I do support life. Certainly, I believe that the choice of life should also protect the child or the embryo or life itself. And certainly the bills that are being presented now is a byproduct of extremism that is happening across our country, such as Governor Cuomo's law on having a 9-month term abortions, and of course in the direction of Virginia and Massachusetts that are engaging in the same conversation. I believe that it has gone extremist, and I intend to redefine life, just like those that want to redefine abortion, I want to redefine life.
What's your redefinition of life?
Well, life begins at conception, and I do not believe that we have the right to choose and to decide out of convenience to be able to cause a life to be terminated. In my opinion and according to my faith, that's not in the realm of man or woman to decide.
And in the cases of rape or incest?
I know that those two particulars have been in the study books all the way back to the 70s, that those are the two situations that obviously have made a big difference in the minds of those. But I will say this, I still favor life, and I'd like to find options and offer situations where people can have a choice to be able to use adoption and other methods rather than destroy life.
So there are, in your mind, there is no exception for rape or incest?
No, sir.
So how do we do that? If a woman indicates that she wants to terminate a pregnancy and you outlaw abortion, mm-hmm. what do? We lock those women up, keep them from harming the fetus. What do we do?
Certainly not. The issue is about the child, the fetus. The child, the fetus deserves protection. And I think that in the conversation that the options should be given. Obviously, right now, when the decisions are being made, as you mentioned, even you mentioned women having that decision, it should be more than just the woman making the decision. It should be the man and the woman that actually created life. Life is something that was created by a basic principle that creates life. And I never believed that God has ever authored a situation where life needs to be terminated. I certainly favor the option. We're in America where people can decide. I get it. But I will say this, that life should be treated with well respect and to include the very fetus that needs protection.
So is it fair to describe your position on abortion as you are an absolutist? No abortion under any circumstances, no termination of any type of pregnancy after conception.
That is correct.
And what kind of punishment do we have for people who violate your perspective?
Judgment is not in the hands of man.
Well, we have judgment laws. We have laws.
I agree. And so I think that the laws that are already standing in that situation protect only part of that situation. I want to see that laws also protect life.
So that would be murder?
It is murder,
so,
in my opinion.
So a woman who terminates a pregnancy, under your view, should be brought up on charges of murder?
The charges of murder right now, for instance, in the state of New York, They have freed that situation to be a free-for-all,
okay,
and
but here in Texas,
I think it lacks control.
But in Texas?
Yeah, in Texas, obviously, you know, I want to favor a situation that protects, obviously, the mother and the life that is being considered. Because at this point, it is being scrapped as something that is not considered life. And that's wrong. And so I favor moving in that direction. Punishment and so forth, I don't think that's what this is. This is about the protection of life, not the destruction of life.
Okay, moving on. There's also concerns about Medicaid expansion in Texas, also a bill that's been floated that would create protections for pre-existing conditions for people in Texas. Mm-hmm. How do you weigh in on that?
The laws in the state of Texas obviously exist to be able to serve the individuals that it services. And right now, the pre-existing conditions as it stands is law. And obviously, we need to protect, you know, those rights. When we want to consider expansion of those programs, then I want to consider the monies before I consider expansion. As business, you never make a call and decision on spending money without knowing how much money you have.
But there have been movements in the federal level to, if they had terminated Obamacare, mm-hmm. as we know it, the Affordable Care Act, then there was efforts to allow states to decide whether or not they would have protections for pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. And so if that comes to Texas, how would you vote on that?
There exist already laws
that protect
pre-existing conditions. Okay, so I support the law as it stands. You asked the question on how do you expand a program, yeah. and we're talking about the finances, and I've answered that question.
Okay. Recently, there was an effort by the Secretary of State's office, which told county election officials to begin a process of purging voters from the rolls. And there, it's been termed a mess by a federal judge. He put a halt to this process. He says that there's many, many flaws in this process, and some have described it as a voter purge. Do you think that this was poorly handled? Where do you see what happened with this voter situation?
Well, David, this is a purge of non-qualified voters. If it were just voters, this is not just about citizens. We're talking about purging the rolls from those that are not citizens that are in the rolls. And,
so
and somehow
that
that's
really,
never
that,
mentioned.
That's not really hold up to the facts.
Okay.
So the facts are that there were the vast majority of the people who were on these rolls that were told to be examined were citizens.
Oh, not vast. At least about 20,000 out of the 95,000. So you're forgetting the 75,000 that are still to be considered. So you want to.
But statistically, looking at what's happened so far, you're able to arrive at that these numbers were greatly flawed.
Yes, they're in process. I understand, and obviously the process is flawed, but not the intent. The intent is to purge the voter rolls from those that don't qualify as voters, if you will.
I really don't know about intent because I don't know. You know. Who knows what the intent is? Some have bad intentions. Some are bad actors. We don't
Correct.
Know. So all we know is what we can be looked at with the facts.
Right.
So a vast number of these names that were produced were actual voters.
See, that's the second time you say vast. And we're only talking about 20,000 out of the 95,000. So I think that we'll come to see what the vast numbers are going to be as they continue the process. The situation is this. You want to make sure that every legal citizen has the right to vote, and I support that. I also support the fact that those that are not qualified to vote need to be purged off the rolls because it is intended for this to be a vote of American citizens. And they have already found, and there have been evidence across the state of Texas where there have been illegal voters putting in the rolls. And I think that is the intent of the process, to clean up.
So as you campaign for this district, and the district has never had a Republican representative in the House, 125, what would that mean if you won?
I believe it's a redirection. Redirection of leadership. There are many people that are frustrated, as you will find in the vote, that are frustrated, that are angry, that are not feeling that they are getting the direction of their particular concerns and issues. And I think you're going to see something that the people are finally said, I'm fed up and I need a new direction.
And so, Tim, what are they frustrated with? Tell me more about that.
Well, the frustration comes to the issues that we're discussing, that there's only one side being presented in this, and the other side, in fact, in some cases, I'm going to call it insanity of what Governor Cuomo is doing, and we don't want to see that in Texas. The frustration is, where is it going? I don't want it to happen in Texas.
So you keep talking about Governor Cuomo and things outside of Texas. So are you running a national campaign?
No, sir.
So are you looking at, like, what's Donald Trump doing? Is he part of this conversation as well?
I think a well-rounded conversation is necessary to be able to make sure we have a good direction that will fulfill the needs of all citizens of House District 125.
But you don't want to be running on a reflection on what's happening outside of your district.
Well, I mean, that's to limit, you know, intelligence. And I would just say that that you need to be aware of the direction of the country so that you can see the direction of the state. You asked the question, you know, where are the voters? And I'm answering the question to say that their minds is on the overall direction as it affects Texas. So you can't just limit to inside the district when these issues are real to people in House District 125.
That was Fred Rangel, the Republican running for the special election for House District 125. He's in a runoff against Democrat Ray Lopez, and that runoff is tomorrow. After this break, Lopez joins us live, and he'll take your calls. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Tomorrow, voters in House District 125 here in San Antonio will pick a new state representative. On the runoff ballot is Democrat Ray Lopez and Republican Fred Rangel. The 86th legislative session is currently underway. It runs till May 27th. The bill filing deadline was March 8th, so the winning candidate, won't be able to submit any new legislation, but they'll be able to vote on others. You heard from Fred Rangel earlier. Now Ray Lopez joins us live in the studio. You get to ask him a question. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. And Ray Lopez, if you could introduce yourself to the listeners.
Sure, be glad to. And David, thank you very much for having me this afternoon. My name is Ray Lopez. I'm a candidate for state representative in District 125, of which I've been a resident for, running on about 36 years. Fortunate to raise my family in District 125. I've got four grown children, been married for a little over 48 years. Last week I celebrated 48 years of marriage, which I considered a pretty significant accomplishment for me. Maybe for my wife it was a little tougher, but all in all, 48 years of marriage. And as most people will know that have followed me in any sense of the word, I've been involved in public service for quite some time. I served as a city councilman for District 6 here in San Antonio until I term limited out last year. Prior to that, I served on the Region 20 Board of Directors for a few years, and then in the 90s, I served on the Northside Independent School District Board of Trustees, honored there to be able to serve as president of that board as well for a few years. So I've had a significant amount of public service. Was fortunate also to work for a company that required its managers to be involved in community service. I'm not sure if they actually thought that I would be that committed to public service, but indeed the company that I worked for 34 years insisted that its managers get involved in the community, do the kinds of things that large corporate citizens ask their employees to do. And I think that bodes well for our community here in San Antonio.
And that was AT&T.
That was AT&T, right.
So can you talk about why you were running as a Democrat? Because when you ran before city council, that was nonpartisan.
Yeah, David, I'll tell you, this is my first run at any partisan race. Both the school board and city council were nonpartisan, although there's always positions that you take that that certainly will reveal your basic principles. And I never shied away from any of the principles that I stood for as a lifelong Democrat. And in most cases, even during the general election, the first part of this race, when you stood the four candidates, the four Democrats, we all, for the most part, felt that the Democratic principles were the foundation for our debates and our discussions and our forums. What we are looking for really is someone that has the experience and the ability to kind of reach across the aisle, have a level of discussion, remembering that the Democrats are in the minority, to have a discussion about the things that we do agree on. Honestly, I really do believe that the vast majority of the voters are pretty tired of the bickering, in some cases not petty, but the arguing across the aisle, never seeming to find common ground and consequently not making any progress. We've got several issues on the on the docket, so to speak, for this legislative session. They're all the important ones: school funding, transportation, air quality. There's a handful of others. And I don't think that there's a lot of argument that those are important issues. I think the argument comes in how do you define the addressing of that issue.
Okay, let's go to the callers. 210-614-8980 is the number to call in if you want to shoot a question to Ray Lopez. He's a candidate, the Democrat, running for House District 125 in a special election. The runoff is tomorrow against Fred Rangel. He's the Republican in the race. And Beth is on the line. And hi, Beth. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm actually a teacher at Northside. I recently moved from Pflugerville. And I'm wondering, with the $5,000 that is being proposed, how it's going to be paid for. My greatest fear is that with the salary increase, the districts are going to be forced to cut back on support staff like math specialists, reading specialists, and our class sizes are going to be increased from 22 to, 30 like they have in California. I know teachers would rather see stable support staff versus a salary increase.
All right, Beth, thank you for that question. So, Ray Lopez.
Well, I think that's exactly what I was talking about a minute ago. We don't necessarily disagree that education is a good place to spend money. It's how are we going to spend it within the programs. And Beth is absolutely right. Teachers do deserve to get a significant raise. It should be part of the package that we put together. But we also have to recognize that there are a lot of people that are educators on those campuses that also need some level of support financially, whether it's custodial, cafeteria workers or the like. I think we need to be treating all of our educators with a very broad stroke and being able to give them money. What I think concerns most people and certainly concerns me is, as the state aligns itself to give money to the school districts, there are other expenses that are going to come with this. For example, the teacher retirement system. If the teacher retirement system is going to be contributed to by these $5,000 that are coming in, where is the district's revenue stream going to be coming from? In most cases, those are defined as unfunded mandates, which would put the burden on the school districts to fund those things. So we've got to be very deliberate about what we're saying we're putting on the table. We want to give teachers, I want to give teachers a significant raise. All educators should be in line to get a significant raise, but we've got to identify where we're going to get additional funding to cover some of those unfunded mandates, and of which one I just discussed.
Let's go to a voicemail we received. This is from Kelly.
Hi, my name is Kelly, and the question that I have for the two candidates for House District 125 is this. What are your thoughts on the Senate Bill 4, in particular, the areas that discuss outcomes-based funding for public schools?
And in regards to the outcome, I want to supplement that with some issue that came up recently, questions about the STAR test, how this test assessment is being, as a study looks at it and says it was improper and not an accurate measure of accountability, and that it may be skewing to certain demographics and harder on other demographics. And Senator Melendez says we should put a halt to the STAR test until we get an examination of what's going on. So as we talk about accountability and failing schools, it's like, how do we determine what's a failing school and if that process is actually fair?
Well, the STAR test is absolutely not fair. We recognize the STAR test for being it's a once a year check on what the progress is, and then everything gets based off of that, and that is not a fair assessment. What we need to do is put in more thorough assessments. For example, finding out where a child started on, for let's call it day zero, and find out how much progress they made to the end of the year. Oftentimes, children don't start at zero; they start at a negative. And if they're making 10 points of progress, we should be able to be in a position to measure that. But that's going to take a significant amount of investment in the and dialogue around how we go about setting those tests up. I believe, as Mr. Senator Menendez does, is that we need to suspend the test for now and try to find other ways of making sure that we're able to be in a position to measure progress for our students. The other thing the STAR test is inadvertently doing, or maybe intentionally doing, it's also measuring campus's performance. Oftentimes, the campus performance is not really based on what the performance of the student's test was. That campus is dealing with the child as it came through the doors, and they're trying to do the best they can to educate them. Oftentimes, and we refer to it oftentimes, is the zip code determines what that child brings with them to the classroom, and every single campus has to deal with all these different variety of issues, and to measure a campus and then to hold back money on those campuses that perhaps are not being able to meet all those needs of that child that are coming in is just not fair.
Another caller, 210-614-8980. If you get a question for Ray Lopez, he's a Democrat running in the special election tomorrow for House District 125. The Republican in the race is Fred Rangel, and Greg is on the line. Hi, Greg. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I would like to ask, what about the environment, the protection of emissions in San Antonio, Texas? Every now and then, we get the questionnaire about or a threat that taxes will go up because of our air pollution and all that kind of thing. But and I've called City Hall several times, but I've never gotten a call back from them that I have an idea that turning right on red when it's possible and when it's safe, because if you don't and you're waiting for that green light, you've got cars behind you that are just sitting there, you know, polluting the air. And, of course, we pollute the air when we drive, but at least we're going somewhere.
Right. Okay, Greg, thank you for that call. Now, you're a candidate for a state representative. Dealing with the environment and coming up with sustainability solutions is something that will be coming up if you're elected to office. The red light issue is an interesting one, but that's not really what we're talking about.
Sure. Right. Well, the red light issue has been discussed at the municipal level, and it's one option that could happen.
I remember when it was illegal to turn right on red.
Yeah, well, that's true.
That's a long time ago.
That is true.
But now, but talk about what you could be doing as a state representative, thinking about things like sustainability and climate change and green energy.
Well, I tell you what, and I very much believe in this perspective, and that's we're headed in the state level down the wrong path. We're making a lot of, if you will, edicts on funding for single-lane highways for folks just adding more lanes and adding more lanes, and haven't really gone into the position of saying, listen, we should be spending the money, but there should be HOV lanes. They should be more HOV type of functionality on our highways. Indeed, what we're doing is we're going completely the opposite. We're not encouraging high occupancy transportation. We're not encouraging multimodal. We're not encouraging a lot of the things that would ultimately take cars off of the road and save those emission pollutants from coming into our atmosphere. We as San Antonians are in a very unique and rare position where we're been hovering for years right above or in the air quality levels of being good for the city of San Antonio. We just recently went below. We have to do something at a state level, regionally, to be able to address that. Certainly, right on red, idling are small little components that could be happening. But what we really need to do is get into a different kind of a transportation mode edict and for the state to be giving monies to the metropolitan planning organizations, for example, and telling them that they can spend the money and they should spend the money on multimodal.
So talking about transportation, that's right in your wheelhouse, so to speak, because you have been at the point, running point on that for city council.
I have. I was fortunate enough in 2009, or maybe I was unlucky enough to get appointed to the MPO by Mayor Castro at the time, which I really, took to heart. I got an opportunity to sit on that MPO the entire 8 years and served as chairman for the last 4 years that I was there. And what we did very extensively in San Antonio was to draw down dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, to come to San Antonio so they could build our freeway system, so we get people through, through the traffic log jams and get them home and get them enjoying their family and their life and not sitting in idle, whether it's at an intersection or just driving down the road.
So to draw a fine line between you and your opponent, Fred Rangel, in the previous interview that we recorded, he agreed that he himself is an absolutist when it comes to abortion, anti-abortion, that there is no exception for rape or incest, and there is no safe time. You cannot terminate a pregnancy after conception. Where are you on those issues?
Well, I would never, under any circumstance, get in the way of a woman to choose make a choice for her own body. I further believe that I think a woman that has a scenario where she has to consider perhaps abortion should consult her mate. That should be, but oftentimes that mate isn't there. I'd call on all men that are out there in that scenario to step up and be men and be a part of that life, and be part of that decision, be part of that woman's life. But oftentimes, as you know, David, that's not the case. It's a woman that's been left alone to make a decision that's difficult to make. And for a man to stand here or sit here and say that he's going to dictate to a woman what the choice for her own body ought to be, I think is misplaced.
In Austin, they're talking about a Tobacco 21 statewide effort. You voted on that when you were on city council, I believe. I don't know, did you vote on that? Were you still there when that happened?
No, I was not there.
Okay, so what's your position on Tobacco 21?
Well, Tobacco 21, look, I don't think that 20, 21, or even 28-year-olds ought to be smoking. It really becomes an issue of local control. I think at the city level, municipalities can make those kinds of decisions. If it puts their communities in a disadvantage, well, then that's their local decision. I believe that municipalities have local control responsibilities, and that's one of them.
All right. We're taking a break. We have a candidate for State Representative 125 in the studio, Ray Lopez. He's a Democrat. He's running against Republican Fred Rangel. They're in a runoff for a special election. The seat opened up when Justin Rodriguez was appointed to the Bexar County Commissioner's Court after we lost Paul Elizondo. If you've got a question or a comment for us, call in. The number is 210-614-8980 about the race, about the candidates, about the issues. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin. Davies House District 125 has a special election, a runoff tomorrow. The winner will be going to Austin to represent that district and the state house. And the candidates are Democrat Ray Lopez and Republican Frank Rangel. We heard in the previous half hour from Mr. Rangel in a pre-recorded interview. And we have Mr. Lopez with us right now to take your calls. The number is 210-614-8980. Here is Kim. And Kim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I had a question about the Texas teacher retirement system and about raising the base. I understand that there has not been a cost of living adjustment for TRS since 1983, and most teachers don't get Social Security. So what were his plans about raising the base for TRS?
All right, Kim, thank you for the call. And the teacher retirement system is in dire need of extra money. So it's not what to do about that.
Well, if there were no money available at all at the state level, I'd say we've got a dilemma in our hands. But indeed, there is plenty of money. It's the priorities that are missing. We've got to realign those priorities. We absolutely have to put money into TRS. We have to make it solvent, get it to the point to where it's functioning like all other high-functioning pension funds, where it's got in the 90-plus percent funding sources, and make sure that we're covering all of our teachers, all of our employees with long-term pensions, that in solid revenue streams for those pensions.
Another issue that I think we can draw a fine line between you and your opponent, Fred Rangel, is on what happened with the voter purge. We've heard about the Secretary of State's efforts to purge voters from the rolls here in the state. Questions coming up about whether or not this was appropriate. A federal judge said he stepped in and halted it, saying that it was a mess. Do you think this was inappropriately handled? And your opponent, Mr. Rangel, said, let's take a look at the intent behind it. What do you think the intent was? So, Ray Lopez.
Well, I slowed down in my response to that because my initial response is to say voter suppression. I don't know if it's direct voter suppression or if it's just indirect voter suppression, but indeed it is not opening up the voting opportunities for all Americans, for all Texans, for all San Antonians. We need to be on the edge of allowing more people to vote, not less, welcoming folks to come to the polls, not less. And I am concerned about illegal or unauthorized voters, but there is a way to have them come in and file their cast their ballot and then file some sort of a petition to check to see if they're actually qualified or there is a question. And that process exists today. The numbers that have been talked about as to how much fraud there is certainly do not raise the issue to a emergency level under any circumstance. And to do what we have been doing in reference to purging list is unconscionable and unconstitutional and certainly un-American.
And where are you with a Medicaid expansion and protection for pre-existing conditions?
Well, we should absolutely be including pre-existing conditions. That's one of the issues that I think can easily be discussed and taken out of the local level and nationalized. With Obamacare, with the Affordable Care Act, we were beginning to embrace that notion and that concept because it's a fair one. It's something that I think as Americans we all expect to have as a benefit, as a source of access for us to be able to get the medication and medical services that we need.
We're seeing the spread of easily preventable diseases here in Texas, measles, outbreaks, mumps, all sorts of diseases that can be prevented with vaccinations. We have seen in the legislature the softening of the exemptions, making it easier for people to do that. And there are bills that continue to be filed in the legislature that would make it easier for people to avoid vaccinations of their children. Where are you on vaccinations?
Well, I think the vaccinations of our children really are a medical decision that a parent needs to make with their doctor. Oftentimes what winds up happening, though, is the parent, by virtue of things like the internet, go in and look up different causes and effects of a particular medication. And indeed, I think if you were to go look up the simplest of medications like aspirin or something similar to that, you'd find that there are disastrous potential consequences to taking that. But the reality of it is it's a very, very small percentage of folks, if any, that would have that level of reaction. And I think that that creates a bit of a hysteria. I believe that we should be able to have the vaccination accessible to all. And I really do believe that our public school system is a very good place to be able to implement those types of policies by virtue of having nurses and even counselors that could help the parent make a good decision for their child's health.
So just to be clear, if there was a vote that came up and you're asked to vote on it in the legislature, that would make it easier for parents to avoid getting their children vaccinated, how would you vote on that?
I would not support that.
And if there were votes that would make it tougher for parents to avoid, how would you go about that?
Well, again, it's very difficult to give a yes or no, but I would definitely favor that approach. Again, I think it's a matter of educating, a matter of information being made available from professionals to parents that care.
So as you campaign, and you've been doing a lot of block walking, I understand.
A little bit.
What are people telling you?
Well, what they're telling me more than anything else, the most consistent thing is they're sick and tired of the argument. They're sick and tired of people just, picking one side or the other that they feel an emotional tie to and making no other decisions other than based on that one thing. What people want us to do, I believe, is fix our schools, fix our roads, and try to create some jobs in our community so that we can indeed have a better lifestyle for not only the folks here in San Antonio today, but for the future San Antonians.
So House District 125 has never had a Republican representative in the state house. If you were to lose and Fred Bergenhell, the Republican in the race, wins, what do you think that would mean?
Well, you know, besides me being extremely disappointed in myself for letting down so many people, beyond that, and quite honestly, that would be for me personally, that would be the biggest, blow to me, because so many people have stepped up. I've got so many people coming into our campaign headquarters and offering help, folks calling in off the street just saying, hey, listen, I know what work you've done before. What can I do to help? And I put them to work, and we give them what I think is a very actionable plan that makes a lot of sense, that goes out and does the basic, grassroots outreach. And for us not to be able to be successful, I would feel like I had let them down. And that's what I really don't want to have happen. So we're working very, very hard. This morning, very early, we were up and running, and we're going to do that all the way to the end. Tomorrow is a big day. We look at things like a five-day vote cycle, Monday through Friday of last week, with the vote ending at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That created a bit of a problem. Oftentimes, the surge of Democrats typically comes slow out of the gate. Conversely, the Republicans usually come quickly out of the gate, right? Then we didn't have a Saturday vote, and we only have a single day of voting this week, which is right in the middle of spring break. So, voter turnout is incredibly important. If there's a way to get a message out to people that this vote matters, and I would, even say, if you're not going to vote for Ray Lopez, to come out and vote and show that, indeed, San Antonio does care about what happens. I think if you take a look at the policies I'm putting forward are, nonpartisan in many cases. They are reasonable in all cases, and I would love to be able to work for the city of San Antonio as a full-time state representative like I have as a city councilman, and make sure that we make these things come to fruition for San Antonians.
Democrats have been on a losing streak when it comes to these special elections. Do you think it's mainly because of get-out-the-vote is not happening, a lot of people are complacent, and that the Republicans are pretty fired up?
Well, I think special elections are special. Everybody keeps on telling me how special they really are, and the 125 race is not like any other special election that has happened. It certainly isn't like the Senate 19 with a lot of rural areas and a different makeup, a geography as well as the demographics. 125 is a pretty compact district that's easy to reach out to in the sense of geography. And that's what we're doing, getting the word out and making sure that people understand it's incredibly important.
And if you do get elected, what would be your signature issue? What would you want to make sure that people pay attention to?
Well, because of my unfortunately, we're going to get there and we're not going to be in a position to launch any bills, right, to pass any bills. There are some bills, however, that I have been walking and watching and working through even since my time on the San Antonio Mobility Coalition, which was up until last month as your chairman. There are some things that we absolutely need to get done that I want to be able to sponsor and move forward. I'll give you one example of that is that it's a revenue issue that's bipartisan. Right now we have propositions 1 and 7 that were passed by the public by around 70%, 70+%. Very popular propositions that stopped the diversion of the tax revenues. Well, those two propositions sunset. After 5 years of existence, Proposition 1 is about to sunset. I believe we need to remove the sunset provision on there and continue being able to, have that proposition generate revenue for the state of Texas. By virtue of doing that, I think it'll add dollars to the revenue stream and take pressure off of the $9 billion that have been identified by the comptroller that are on the table for budgeting purposes. The day of single funding for any project is over. We've got to look for multiple ways of doing it. There are other ways. We have a rainy day fund that collects collects zero interest. It is not an interest-bearing account. We can change that as well. The comptroller has suggested that. We're the only state that doesn't do that.
All right. Ray Lopez is a candidate in the special election tomorrow for House District 125. He's a Democrat. The Republican is Fred Rangel. We heard from Mr. Rangel in the half hour earlier, a pre-recorded interview. The election is tomorrow. This is a special election, and we encourage everyone to get out and vote. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.